You could have been anywhere else right now, but you decided to choose this podcast to listen to. Let me say this. My name is Antonio Laborte, the host of the show. Thank you guys so much. If you do tune in, if you have tuned in before, that you keep doing so, and it's greatly appreciated. And I love the support, and I love you guys for listening and following this whole thing. This is a new episode for you guys. I hope that you enjoy it. Thank you for tuning in. Thank you for supporting. I really appreciate it. All right, peace. So the NCAA last week confirmed and pushed through legislation that will allow nearly 500,000 athletes to start earning money based on their fame, their likeness, their celebrity status, what have you, without the fear of endangering their eligibility or engaging in legal trouble with the school that they're at by violating like amateurism rules and things like that that have been around for way, way too long at this point, right? And like this new acceptance of the NIL, this wasn't just like a one-time thing. It wasn't just like a boom, like we realized what we did wrong. No, this is the result of different states coming together and getting some momentum behind this thing, right? Like, I don't believe the NCAA board had the strong desire to really kill off this money machine that they had unless it was forced out of their hands, you know, and with each state agreeing that it was time to make the change, the decision for the NCAA to officially put their weight behind this thing, and more importantly, their signature behind it, this is what proved to be the driving force behind it, was the states, you know, the trying to fight against the inevitable, which just wasn't going to happen, wasn't going to work that way, you know. I was reading this article by the Associated Press, and they highlight specifically that the move of the new NIL law, which actually stands for Name, Image, and Likeness, in case you weren't sure. I had to look it up myself because I was like, I couldn't seem to put together what the letters meant. You know, I thought it could have meant like new income laws, but I wasn't really sure until I did a Google search and saw that. But anyway, the Associated Press talks about what comes of this new agreement. And essentially, it suspends NCAA restrictions on payments to athletes for things such as sponsorship deals and online endorsements and personal appearances. And it applies to all three divisions, which is close to around, I think it was like 500,000 student athletes. They also say that some schools already have plans in place to classify the NIL education as four-credit coursework, which in my mind is like, either schools are making NIL education a part of the degree requirements for all student athletes, or they're just given courses that teach this kind of stuff, which can then also be counted and seen as credited coursework, which then may be added on to your total credit requirement, right? Hopefully it's the second one, because like adding more credits to a degree plan, like not every athlete may even want to pursue, like they may not even want to do this stuff, just further complicates the whole process and slows down the degree, the whole degree earning process. But nonetheless, even though this is seen as like a liberating moment for the athletes, like schools have already created some clauses that shrink the freedom of the student. Some of which of them make sense, right? And then others that just seem like a need for some control. So kids in several schools have been guided and advised about using and not using logos and uniforms for making that cash, which means that some students at some schools can't use these logos or uniforms for trying to get that coin. Like Florida and Texas are not allowing any connections to gambling. Kentucky said that NIL pursuits could alter those students who are on financial aid based on like need, like, you know, they need to be on that kind of government aid, which is crazy to me, because like, you know, you have this $1 billion corporation that's trying to make sure these students don't get too money hungry, you know what I mean, not trying to get too greedy while they get their education. Like, they're like, you know, we can't give you this money and you having making this money at the same time without one of these things being reduced, you know, for your own sake. Like, we can't have you getting this coin. We can't have you getting this coin off these endorsements and that becoming the thing that ruins this college sports thing we got going on, you know? And the fact that there's not even just the college, the fact that there's like regular civilians out here just being like, yeah, these kids getting this cash, like, it's going to ruin the sport. That's just foolish to me. First of all, it's not even a guarantee that all these kids are able to make, that they're able to merge with these sponsors or make any significant money off their name or their game at all. Like, the power still stands with the NCAA and the college organizations. Like, as long as TV deals are struck, as long as the NCAA can make profits off parading these kids around like some, you know, fresh meat, the win will always land in the back pocket of these big corporations, man, of the NCAA. And it's dangerous telling these kids that they could lose out on college funding because they can now possibly earn more money. Like, you're going to tell these kids, like, hey, listen, like, we would love the sport and everything, but, like, because now you have some, like, a tiny amount of control back, nah, we can't help you out. Sorry. Looks like you figured it out, right? Go ahead and pay for this now. When some of this stuff is, like, these kids are coming out here with five-figure, six-figure debt. And again, it's not even a guarantee these kids are going to make money. It's not even a guarantee that these kids are going to even want to do something like this. You don't see these non-athletes at the college level losing a stipend or funding, even though they're working on the side at their job or whatever. Or even the ones you could make an argument for, like content creators and things like that. Like, they get to self-promote without the fear of having any direct, like, ultimatum for funding. An ultimatum that essentially pins you between losing out on support because you now have an ounce of power. A teeny amount of leverage given back to you. Now they want to sit here and talk about, oh no, okay, you got it. Yeah. Go ahead. It looks like you got things figured out. The student athlete, in my opinion, was never going to get the complete control that they deserved. There was never going to be a reality where these kids get to have their cake and eat it too. Only the college gets to do that. Only the NCAA gets to have their cake and eat it too. They're the only ones who are able to make money, take the money away. They take a little dent in their armor with this, but they still got all control now. And it's going to be interesting to see what extremes they're willing to go to try to really strangle these kids into a position that, you know, they can't really do much. Like, they can't maneuver that much with this NIL stuff. You know, it may feel as though, oh, I have this control, but really there's all these exceptions and these clauses and, like, I don't know. And then even with the kids, like, you know, it's a dangerous game because, like, you know, you may make some bad investments. There's going to be kids who make bad investments, man. There's going to be kids out there who think that they're bigger than what they are. And that's just not the case at this point. Like, they may have the potential to be someone who could earn a pretty good amount of coin for their name, their game, whatever it may be. But, like, at this moment, maybe it's too early for them. And they jump on this endorsement, the sponsor, way too early. And they end up making some bad choices, get into a wrong business venture with the wrong people, and you know, some serious damage can happen, man. They got the wrong person in the ear telling them what to do, what not to do, and, like, you know, their whole college reputation can be tarnished. Their ability to make money in the future can get negatively impacted. Like, it's just it's a crazy thing right now, man. I'm hoping that, you know, moving forward, it's gonna be like the Wild Wild West, man. I forget where I was listening to that. Somebody, I think it was one of your sports networks, they're talking about how, like, it's going to be a wild, wild west, man. Like, these kids are going to be out here just jumping on any, you know, brand or whatever, like, and the commercial that you may see, the advertisement on social media is going to be crazy, you know? But you're going to figure out who can sell and who can't, though, you know? I hope every single one of these kids is able to get some profit off this, but selling yourself isn't just saying, hey, buy this, you know, brand, or, you know, do this or follow this or like this. Nah, man, you really gotta sell. You really gotta be able to sell yourself, sell an idea, and it's like, it's gonna be hard, man. But props to these kids. I hope this is a step in the right direction, because it's way overdue. The pockets of these colleges, these coaches, anybody involved with the organization has been lining up for way too long, man. It's time to get these power back to these athletes, man, these young athletes. So best of luck to them, man. I'm going to keep the same conversation about athletes trying to make a name for themselves, about them trying to prove themselves and make a little bit of money. We're going to talk about Sha'Carri Richardson. Okay, so the World Anti-Doping Agency, or WADA, W-A-D-A, has listed THC, the primary psychoactive compound of marijuana, a, quote, substance of abuse, on its 2021 prohibited list. In this Yahoo article that I was reading, it stated that all cannabis-based products, except for cannabidiol oil, I hope I say that right, or CBD as most people know about, are banned, quote, in competition. So unless it is CBD, anything other than that, right, if THC is found in an athlete's system on the day of an event, that athlete is subject to punishment. And because Sha'Carri failed her test, she had a failed test that occurred after she won the women's 100-meter dash at the Olympic trials, this pretty much cancels it. It discredits her first place finish and disqualifies her from the event in Tokyo. she eventually accepted the suspension of 1 month, you know, that started, I think it was like June 28th, something like that, and expired July 28th, right, before track and field events begin in Tokyo. So technically, the USA track and field could select her for a relay team, but its rules require her to be entered as a top three finisher at the trials in the 100, which she is no longer one of them. The statement made by the U.S. anti-doping agency CEO, Travis Tigert, he said this. He said, quote, "The rules are clear." Right? He made it known, the rules are clear, but this is heartbreaking on many levels. And just for some context, too, Sha'Carri was smoking in Oregon, where the positive test occurred. And it should be noted that not only is it decriminalized there, but it's legal recreationally, too. So Sha'Carri is someone who broke the rules that can be questioned, probed, and prodded from every corner. But those who hold the handbook will say that the rules are the rules are the rules. And if one were to break them, no matter how insignificant or culturally inferior they may be to some, we cannot allow any competitors to sneak by and get a pass. The thinking is that she should have known better than to do something like that near Olympic trials. Some have brought up Michael Phelps, which to me isn't a great example if you're looking to kind of examine the behavior by the Olympic Committee, because they came down on him about his use too. But if you're looking to make a comparison between the public's reaction to Phelps and then Sha'Carri, I think there's one that could be made, right? Like, Sha'Carri received tons of, and I don't even know if it's a Sha'Carri or Sha'Carri. I keep kind of going between both. I hope I'm getting the name right. I hope it's like Sha'Carri, but she received tons of hate and online, I guess you could call it disappointment, like, I guess, which feels a lot like real life disappointment. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, it's Twitter, yeah, it's the internet, but like, you know, you're getting all these comments, like, all these people were, you know, supporting you, making you out to be like almost like this hero, and now all of a sudden you got people switching up on you, and not just white folks too. You saw some black folks, you know, getting up on her for whatever it was, like, you know, making us look bad or all that nonsense. Like, yeah, I don't know, but you know, there's claims that she was a fraud, like a fuck up, and every demoralizing thing that you could think of for a young person who wasn't even doing anything like wrong, like doing anything illegal. She literally did nothing wrong. She was engaging in a behavior that is acceptable by law in the state that this happened. And the drug in question wasn't HGH, wasn't steroids or something that gave her like any like physiological advantage. Like, you've seen those commercials on TV years back about the teen who smokes weed and like they literally get stuck like and swallowed by the couch. Like, the whole gag is that like people on weed tend to move like stupidly slow. Like, the whole shtick is that, you know, weed smokers just get the munchies and then move like tortoises all day. They just move slow as hell. Her smoking that weed is not about to make her Wonder Woman out there. Her smoking that weed is not going to make her Superwoman out there, man. The worst part about this was, even if you were to make a case that not... even if you were to make a case that an athlete can't have the presence of any substance during the race, like, she didn't even do it the day of. You know how drug tests work? Like, that stuff can stay in your system way after you even smoked. And it was said too that she received the minimum punishment for something like that. The maximum for something like that is up to a year suspension. A year suspension for smoking a little weed. And then it can be reduced. Like, the punishment can be reduced if the ingestion of said drug wasn't sport or performance related. Right, so and for a substance to make WADA's prohibited list, WADA? Yeah, WADA, yeah. For them to make their prohibited list, they say it must satisfy at least two of the following three criteria. Listen to this, y'all, I wrote this down. And keep the idea of weed in mind when I go through them, okay? So there's three criteria, and it must satisfy at least two to make it onto the prohibited list. Okay, number one, it represents an actual or potential health risk to the athlete. Remember, keep weed in mind, okay? Number two, It has the potential to enhance or enhances sport performance. And then number three, it violates the spirit of the sport. Now, I don't know about y'all, but after reading through that list, the only one I could even fathom in the tiniest, slightest bit is number three. And even then, that's like an extreme reach. Like, an extreme reach. And I was like, damn, like, so they looked at that. They looked at that situation. They said, okay, she was smoking weed. And we think that that can either pose a health risk, which we know that that's not the case. It has the potential to enhance sport, which we know that's definitely not the case. And it violates the spirit of the sport. Even if it did violate three, that's only one of the three. Like, that doesn't make any sense, y'all. It makes no sense. And with that, too, I want to talk a little bit about the idea that I had mentioned in the episode details about this, right? I had this, like, little theory. Black people, but in this case, a black athlete being marketed and then torn down through nothing but really an outdated policy, outdated thinking, outdated culture, norms, which tainted an image that had no right to be tainted at all. She represents a much greater problem that tends to affect black and brown people more often and more harshly than it does anybody else. And I think I call it, it was like the delete, punish, and copy approach, right? So you have individuals, organizations, companies, the nation. You have taken the output of a group, commoditized it, crunched the group into pieces to eliminate any to eliminate any communal growth, right? And then you just rebrand the work. You know, you just reestablish it as something else, something that you created when you stole it, right? You tore down these people, you took it from them, and then you resold it out somewhere else, right? To fit this model, you deplete a person's resources and ability to continue their work or their creation, and you punish them for these behaviors, and then you copy the same methodology or principles in other ways to go ahead and profit off it. When we look at the history of marijuana in the United States, it starts and ends with black and brown people bringing the custom and the culture, having it, and then becoming a threat to the white community. That's what they said. And then slowly but surely be turned into this marketable source of cheap entertainment over decades, right? We've seen weed be used in movies and cinema and TV shows as a gag, right? Slowly but surely, it kind of made its way into culture, and you were able to profitize off it. Black and brown people were incarcerated, right? White people got incentivized to use it, you know, every now and then. Not all the time, but every now and then you can make a joke or a movie or a show or a reference to something like that, right? And they get laughs and whatever, but and now we see what the antithesis of weed smoking. Martha Stewart gets her share of the crop and brings Snoop Dogg by sheer luck. Like, Snoop Dogg, by sheer luck of the draw, his ability to now be accepted as a lovable black character, and I use character purposely here. He is a lovable black character for this, right? He's kind of become a caricature. Not by his own doing, but he's kind of become this representative of this aloof, you know, black person that we can, like, you know, he's harmless or whatever, but really, you know, it wasn't always like that for him, right? But companies are springing up, companies are springing up like crazy with very little to no black owners in sight. Black people serving ridiculous amount of prison time still, when some states have about 100 different ways to get that THC into the brain, man. And it's not just weed, like, I'm using weed as a reference because of, you know, Sha'Carri Richardson, but it's not just weed that we see this in. It's a good history lesson to know and understand how black ideas and projects have been robbed and pulled from right underneath us. And the history of it hides so much of that. When you just even look at the situation with marijuana. But this is not a new concept. Successful black people with wonderful, innovative ideas getting denied or denounced just so a white man can whistle on by aimlessly, pick it up, and run with it for the win. Like, how often the rug gets pulled from underneath us in comparison to how magnificent black culture is truly outstanding. And I use magnificent purposely. Black culture, when you look at it in its entirety, I don't care if it's music, arts, sciences, like, when you just look at what black people have been able to accomplish in relation to what has been stolen or copied or made out to be like a negative thing, like tearing down black culture, like, you know, it's outstanding to even think about it. black culture, black faces, black bodies, black voices, black vision. They get criticized and copied every single day. It has been for decades. And although Sha'Carri Richardson has been identified for her skill and talent, then taken down by something that wasn't even her problem to begin with, she still represents everything a strong and determined black woman is. She is the story of black Americans. You have this special gift. It gets noticed, or gets identified. You do something that isn't even really bad. It's not a crime. It's not wrong. It violates some rule somewhere that you don't, that they don't, it doesn't apply here. And now you're made into this bad, this criminal, this villain. And you have to now deal with the repercussions of that. And when you were once celebrated, you're now criticized. You got people now trying to destroy your character. But yet she's still strong. She's still out here. She's still speaking to the public. She's still doing her thing. She will come back. She will come back. I guarantee that. And that's the fearlessness that we see, like the vulnerability and the viciousness that we saw against these competitors in the past. Like, she, like, the way that she was beating up on these people, man, like, winning, you know, noticeably. Like, it wasn't even close. Like, she was beating these girls. You know what I mean? Like, she was doing her thing. The way that she was winning these races in the past, we will see this again, too. We will see it from her moving forward. Like, we will see this viciousness, man. The way that she's able to just, you know, dominate. Like, it's just, you know, it really, it truly dominate her sport at this time. Like, you know, she'll be back. This is a hiccup, if you even want to call it that. I don't think so. I think it just got overblown. But she will be back. And her story is far from finished, man. Her story is far from finished.